This is not a time to panic. These are many statements that are being made out there by a very bellicose leader.
Top U.S. officials downplay North Korea rhetoric. It's Thursday, August 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Japan mulls its role amid nuclearized nations. Chinese netizens have a new term for accepting refugees. A female police chief on the beat in Pakistan. Plants to block the sun and power things. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis says North Korea risks annihilation if it begins a war and told Pyongyang it must end its pursuit of nuclear weaponry. Mattis said North Korea should cease any consideration of actions that would lead to the end of its regime and the destruction of its people. The reclusive communist nation, he added, must choose to stop isolating itself and stand down its pursuit of nuclear weapons. North Korea said earlier Wednesday that its armed forces were carefully examining a plan to launch missile strikes against Guam. American military bases on the U.S. Pacific Island territory are believed to hold the largest U.S. arsenal of nuclear weapons outside the continental United States. The governor of Guam, Eddie Calvo, said authorities there are prepared for any eventuality, but they do not feel they are under threat.
This is not a time to panic. These are many statements that are being made out there by a very bellicose leader. But at this point, there has been no change in the security situation here in Guam. I've gotten assurances, again, from all levels, both local command and Washington, D.C., that this island will be defended and is and the United States military has their forces ready to protect and defend not only Guam, but all American interest in this region and the homeland.
President Donald Trump, in the midst of an exchange of bellicose threats with North Korea, declared that the United States' nuclear arsenal is now, quote, far stronger and more powerful than ever before. Some critics have questioned the vehemence of Trump's fire and fury remarks Tuesday. White House aides said Wednesday the words were improvised by the president before he spoke to reporters late Tuesday at his vacation home in New Jersey, but they emphasized that the president's comments certainly reflected the tone he meant to convey to North Korea. On a refueling layover in Guam as he returned to Washington from a trip through Southeast Asia, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said, quote, I think Americans should sleep well at night and have no concerns about this particular rhetoric of the last few days. VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden is in Seoul. He spoke a short time ago with International Edition's Sarah Williams about the much calmer atmosphere in the South Korean capital, which lies very close to the border with the North.
Well, while a lot of the talk in the U.S. seems to be very ratcheted up, and there seems to be a kind of DEFCON 4 level of concern about the North Korea nuclear threat, here in Seoul, people are on summer vacation, and it is not as big an issue as one would suppose.
Now, in your talks with some regional security analysts, what have they had to say about this situation? Because this is a relatively new U.S. president, and he's dealing with a situation with North Korea where it seems to be increasingly testing missiles. And what have they had to say about it?
Well, I think here a lot of the analysts I talk to continue to believe that the issues of deterrence and the concern over mutual assured destruction should either side in this Korean standoff attempt, a major attack on the other, continues to hold, even though North Korea is continuing to work on its long-term nuclear missile threat. South Korea has been a potential target here for the last 70 years, and North Korea has the capability to, as it has described, rain fire upon Seoul and most of the north of South Korea, and at least half the population if war were to ever quickly break out. South Korea also has the capability to intensely attack North Korea, and with the U.S. at its side, most war planners say that the U.S. would eventually win a war with North Korea if it ever came to that,
although the cost would be catastrophic and millions of lives could be lost.
Well, the North Korean People's Army released a statement Wednesday saying it's examining plans for a missile strike on the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam. I mean, the fact, though, that they, you know, named this place, it seems like that's something that they're considering.
We could see a missile launch into the sea near Guam or some other type of long-distance missile test at some point. But to contemplate that North Korea would actually attempt a long-range missile strike against Guam, which, by the way, Guam has the THAAD missile defense system on its island. So the military base there could technically defend itself against a long-range missile attack. But to contemplate them, it is not in line with North Korea's actions within the last few years. There have been no attacks. So there's been a ratcheting up of rhetoric. It's possible, because the new sanctions came out, that North Korea is drawing a line in the sand and will actually take some sort of suicidal military action, because that's what it would be, and if that happens. But there's a lot of skepticism right now on whether that's just a way for North Korea to taunt President Trump or whether it's a meaningful threat.
VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Patton speaking with Sarah Williams. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. North Korea, quote, examining plans to launch missile strikes against U.S. bases on Guam. North Korea releases Canadian pastor. World Health Organization in Myanmar says swine flu outbreak not an unusual event. Pakistan's Sharif holds controversial rally following ouster. U.S. lawyer tells China, free Liu Xia or face consequences. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to check out the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. As North Korea and the United States up the rhetoric over Pyongyang's nuclear weapons program, long-held taboos are being broken in neighboring Japan, the only country to have suffered a nuclear bombardment at the end of World War II. Analysts say the debate over whether Tokyo should develop nuclear weapons of its own is moving from the far-right fringes to the political mainstream. Henry Ridgewell reports from the Japanese capital.
A Japanese defense paper this week echoed reported concerns among U.S. intelligence that Pyongyang has achieved the key final step of miniaturizing nuclear warheads. Former Defense Ministry advisor Narushige Michishita.
It is possible, or quite likely even, that North Korea can attack Tokyo with nuclear weapons today. And missiles is launched, it will reach Japan within 10 minutes.
North Korea is believed to have more than 200 missiles capable of hitting Japan.
An attack on a crowded city like Tokyo would put hundreds of thousands of lives at risk.
Japan's constitution allows military action only in self-defense. Hawkish conservatives, including Finance Minister Taro Aso, argue Japan should keep open the option of developing nuclear weapons. The issue is openly debated in South Korea, but polls show just 5% of Japanese want the country to be a nuclear power.
I don't think we will go nuclear in the foreseeable future. Even if South Koreans might go nuclear, we'll be the last.
Others question whether nuclear weapons would offer diplomatic leverage.
If we possess nuclear weapons and say we would retaliate if North Korea used nuclear weapons against, is it credible? I don't think so.
This week marked the anniversary of the 1945 Hiroshima and Nagasaki nuclear bombings, which killed hundreds of thousands of people. The commemorations were clouded by renewed talk of war.
Strong fears are spreading that nuclear weapons may be used in the not-so-distant future.
Japan's Prime Minister reiterated the country's long-held position.
Here in Nagasaki, a city that continues to pray for perpetual peace, I reaffirm my commitment to realizing a peaceful world without nuclear weapons.
Analysts question whether that commitment would be tested if Japan came under attack. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Tokyo.
Happening now in Asia, China has evacuated tens of thousands of people in its mountainous southwest after a strong earthquake killed at least 19. Local authorities say 247 others were injured in the quake, which was centered in Nagawa Prefecture, home to nomadic Tibetan herders and a well-known national park. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. On Chinese internet, new expressions are coined every year, but a few of them earn their way into Western media. In recent months, however, one such word captured the West's imagination. Harry Chen has this story for VOA from Washington as Lori London narrates.
It's called Baizhoua, or white left. It was first used 2 years ago on the Chinese internet as an epithet against Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany for accepting more than 1 million refugees in her country. For many internet users in China, she is perceived to embody an overly charitable white knight at the expense of her own citizens who might stand to lose the quality of their lives. According to Zheng Chenchen, a postdoctoral researcher of political theory at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark, the word Baizhoua reflects biases against white hypocrites who are ignorant and arrogant Westerners who pity the rest of the world and think they are saviors. Zhang wrote an essay in May about this word, which garnered wide media attention both in China and the United States. In one case, Fox News political commentator Tucker Carlson ribbed her article as proof that American liberals are delusional. Zhang, who also writes about human rights and humanitarian government, said that over time, the use of Baizhoua expanded into other areas of civic discourse from talks on refugees.
I noticed that it first got very influenced in the context of the European refugee crisis. At the time, it was mainly about anti-immigration, anti-refugees, and kind of anti-humanitarian sensibility, this kind of mentality. But then it got a lot more multidimensional during the U.S. presidential campaign. I think they draw lots of inspiration from the American outright and the American supporters of Trump. Then at the time, you got lots of other debates that started to appear in this anti-Baizhoua rhetoric.
Zhang added that those who regularly label others as Baizhoua are often Chinese citizens who anticipate the decline of the West and a rising China. For Kaiser Kuowa, the host of the Seneca podcast about current affairs in China, Baizhoua has become a catch-all for opinionated liberals with progressive views on social issues.
Basically anything that touched on issues of race, of religion, of nativism or nationalism, about even gender politics, about homosexuality or transsexuals, anything where there are a stark bifurcation between conservatives and people who are more progressive, that can be used not only for progressive leftists in Western countries themselves, but also to attack people in China who have sort of sympathies with them. They use the word sort of interchangeably with the English words like cuck or libtard or regressive left. You know, all these insults that they use, it's extremely versatile, and they can use it as kind of a broad spectrum pejorative, an insult that hits anyone to the left of them on the political spectrum.
Kuowa also said that it's not contradictory for anyone to be pragmatic and idealistic at the same time, but many critics of Baizhoua believe that one cannot fend for themselves while standing in solidarity with others, an idea that he said is simply not true. Baidu Tiaba, an internet forum popular in China, has blamed discussions about Baizhoua. When the word is searched, the page states the entry is closed due to relevant state laws and policies. As Baizhoua continues to appear in internet search, experts say it's testing the fluid boundary of government censorship for reasons that are not entirely clear. But Zhang Chenchen, the researcher at the University of Copenhagen, said one thing is clear, BaiZoa is here to stay as China's new political buzzword. For reporter Harry Chen, Lori London, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korea said Wednesday it has released a Canadian pastor for health reasons. Hyun Soo Lim had been serving a life sentence since 2015, accused of committing subversive acts against the North Korean government. The Canadian government denies the claims. This story and more can be seen on VOA 60 and visit our VOA Asia Facebook page. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Rizwana Hamid made history a month ago when she became the first female head of a male police station in Pakistan's Khyber Province, or KPK, where conservative cultural and religious traditions often discourage women from leaving home. Ayaz Ghul files from Peshawar, the provincial capital.
Rizwana Hamid has been a member of the provincial police force for the past 15 years and has participated in numerous crime investigations, as well as daring raids against suspected criminal terrorist hideouts. But after becoming the first police officer to supervise a male police station in a predominantly conservative male society, she's feeling the pressure.
It's a very difficult job for me.
But Hamid is enjoying the job and is determined to undo the impression women are a lesser creed.
If men are asked to take on household responsibilities and babysitting for the whole day, I don't think they can handle them. Whereas women can easily handle professional abilities outside the home also.
The police officer says women in the surrounding localities have been until now reluctant to enter the police station with their complaints and discuss them openly with male police officers.
Peshawar is a closed society where women are mostly confined to their homes. And even if they are subjected to domestic violence, they endure it and avoid publicly talking about it. But my presence here is now encouraging them to bring problems to the police station, and their number is growing by the day. And when their problems are solved, they take back a message of satisfaction to their communities, which is emboldening other women to visit the police station.
Pashtun families in Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province have been traditionally reluctant to allow their women to join the police. That is why there are hardly 10% women police personnel in the entire province. But officials say the trend is changing because of projections in media of women police officers.
Even some of our female complainants also ask me after their issues are addressed whether they can join the police, and I sit down with them to explain the process.
Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Peshawar, Pakistan.
Developing at this hour in Asia, the Japanese city of Nagasaki Wednesday marked the 72nd anniversary of the U.S. nuclear bomb attack on that city in 1945 that effectively ended World War II. The bombing came 3 days after Hiroshima was targeted in the first ever use of a nuclear weapon. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization reports that there are between 2 and 3 million cases of melanoma skin cancer reported every year. Sunscreen, of course, is a big part of preventing these cancers, but chemical-laden sunscreens definitely have their drawbacks. VOA's Kevin Enix reports that's why scientists are now scouring the natural world to understand how plants protect themselves from damaging ultraviolet rays.
Antarctica isn't exactly awash in biodiversity, but there are plenty of plants and animals that call this coldest of continents home. Chilean scientists are studying some of these plants to see how they react to the relentless summertime of damaging ultraviolet rays.
And we have found that both species are tolerant of ultraviolet radiation.
Zuniga is studying these plants to find out how they shrug off the barrage of UV rays that causes skin cancer in humans. The hope is that the same compounds protecting the plants can also protect humans.
Specifically, in the case of Colombanthus, we identified a group of molecules that act as solar filters, and that is very interesting because, of course, one understands that given the environment in which the plant develops, in the spring-summer, the radiation levels are very high. The plant has strategies to avoid the damage that this radiation generates.
Since the industrial age, loss of the ozone layer has increased the amount of UV reaching the Earth by 30%, according to NASA, though that level has stabilized in recent years. Zuniga's research could also have implications for plants as a way to protect them and increase crop yields.
This allows us also to understand how the plants respond to the ultraviolet radiation, thinking that this information could be used in the not-too-distant future and be incorporated into plants of agronomic interest that are susceptible to ultraviolet radiation.
Zuniga and the university are currently looking for partners that will help them develop products based on their research. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
All around the world, large cities are generating huge amounts of unusable food and other organic waste. And while some is recycled into compost, most ends up in landfills, and that's wasting a potential source of energy. A pilot project started about 3 years ago in New York City is adding food scraps to the existing wastewater treatment plant to be turned into biogas. VOA's George Pudich tells us residents have embraced it with enthusiasm.
For a number of years, New York's 14 wastewater treatment plants have been processing the city's raw sewage into clean water, fertilizer, and methane, which is the main component of natural gas. But New York City authorities realized that huge amounts of other organic waste sent to landfills could also be converted into energy.
Food waste is similar to a solids that you get at the wastewater treatment plant. So we decided to try and augment our digesters using the food waste component.
In 8 egg-shaped digesters at the Newtown Creek wastewater treatment plant, bacteria slowly break down the so-called bioslurry into a more stable material and a useful gas.
This tank is holding about 3 million gallons of a combination of biosolids, which comes from wastewater, and also food waste. It sits here on average for about 30 days. And during that process, it's breaking down and we're creating methane gas.
For now, the plant is processing about 60 tons of food waste daily, but plans to increase the capacity to 250 tons. The daily production of methane is about 85,000 cubic meters, which needs additional treatment to be turned into natural gas. Food waste is collected from cafeterias in some schools, restaurants, and residences. New Yorkers quickly embraced the initiative to collect food scraps.
There you go. Everything, all food products, whether they're good or bad, spoiled or stems, parts that you were never going to use, everything goes into it. It is so simple and it cuts down on our trash that I can't understand why anybody wouldn't want to do it.
The Newtown Creek wastewater treatment plant also has an aesthetic dimension. At night, its illuminated award-winning egg-shaped digesters create a pleasing cityscape along the Brooklyn waterfront. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
There are many ways to listen to VOA Asia and many places where you can hear us, like Tainan, Taiwan. If you happen to be there, catch us on the Voice of Chungrung, Star Radio, FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University. We're glad that everyone there who's been listening to us joined us today. And wherever you are in the world, you can catch us in a variety of ways. A lot online through VOA Asia Facebook, where we stream daily, our website at voanews.com, or even on iTunes and SoundCloud. No matter how you listen to us, we'd love to hear from you and tell us how you're hearing our program, either by sending us a message on VOA Asia Facebook or just writing us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. We've got some great people helping us out each and every day, like Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Kelvin Fowler, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.